just like that. Hello, how are you, Carrie?
So good. Best day of my life so far today.
Son of a gun. I have to make a new one now.
I know. Hello, welcome. Coach Woodard.
Welcome to The Backpack Show.
Where we bring you insights about success from unusual places.
Boy, have we some unusual places today. We've got a mix. And, you know, reconnecting and connecting with someone I hadn't met in person before, even digitally, and a music executive. Who's our guest today?
We have Andrea Weckerly, who founded Civilla Nation. They're an organization designed to help people communicate and engage online in an open, responsible, and accountable way. Not that we need that these days, right? I mean, we're all good. And brand new Civilla Nation president, Jolie O'Dell.
Hooray!
So, yeah, I think you might know her from way back. I'm so excited. And music executive Jason Davis is going to join us. He's been in the industry for more than 20 years, and he's worked with some amazing artists. He's also a singer-songwriter in his own right. So we're going to talk with him about what he's doing these days.
There's a lot to get covered. And yet, Jolie used to write for, like, anybody who was worth writing for back in the day, and sometimes herself. And
She's not worth writing for. You imply that she's not.
But no, but we don't, you know, when we write for other people, we tend not to write. Oh, Len Joy, my friend Leslie has a copy of one of your books. She just finished it. She went right through it. So she said she's going to have to get all the rest of your books.
It's so good. I keep telling everybody it's so good. I have to leave after our first guest today. I don't want anybody to think something bad happened to you.
Oh, is that today? You've got to go? Okay. Yeah. Today, Carrie's going to go after her first guest because she doesn't like Jason Davis.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Carrie Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Okay, maybe that's not entirely true.
Not entirely true. I love Lynn Joy.
Lynn Joy is swell.
We missed you too, Naz. Happy to have you back. So let's do it.
Let's talk about
civility.
Yeah, I'm going to probably need some help
because if there's one thing everybody says about Chris Brogan, so he never says anything he regrets. And he's unfailingly not grumpy.
I'm cheery ball. There's been a longstanding joke that they take me everywhere twice the second time to apologize.
Oh, Naz wants to co-host.
Oh, Naz.
Think you can fill these shoes, Naz?
Good luck, baby. All right, I'm grabbing Andrea and I'm grabbing Jolie.
Hello. Nope, he's going to put you.
Good morning.
Yep. Whatever side you're on when we go into the green room is the side Chris needs you on when we go live.
You have to be orderly.
Yeah.
There you go.
Nothing works. Yeah. How's every little thing? How's the land of Civilla Nation today? And what made you make this project?
So I'll start with that because Jolie, she's going to talk about the future of Civilla Nation. So it probably goes back to 2006 when I started blogging. So I haven't been blogging as long as you have, Chris, but quite a long time anyway. And I remember meeting people from all over the world. It was really super cool. And that's back when you had to do a round robin, leave comments on everybody's blog and get to know each other that way before social media. So that kind of dates me, how long I've been around. But it was really super cool. And I got to meet people on both coasts in the center of the United States and literally in Europe, Africa, Asia, you name it. But I noticed that there was always like somebody out there whose soul reason for being seemed to be to wreak havoc online. And they'd come and leave nasty comments, or they'd come and like sabotage a beautiful environment, a beautiful community, just for kicks. You know, now we call them trolls, but there's a lot of different type of trolls. So they were trolls or harassers or just plain assholes. And I remember thinking, you know, this is really bad. And can't we do something about this? And there was always a focus on bullying for kids, and then later on cyberbullying of children. And that's still really, really super important. But at the time, very few people were really talking about how to help adults with this sort of stuff. And if you did talk about it, a lot of people would just say, well, you know, it's the internet, or even better, if you can't handle it, don't go online, which is it's ludicrous because online, offline were intertwined at the time and even more so now.
That's like telling someone just don't leave your house and then nobody outside can bully you.
Yeah, exactly. Not a problem, right? You know, make the people responsible for it, the people who are being harassed and attacked and stuff like that. And so, you know, I saw what was happening to some of my colleagues. It wasn't just personal attacks. It was also professional reputational attacks. And they were losing business. And some of these people were in the communications field. And it was really, really serious because if your credibility takes a hit, then you're not going to get clients. And so we were just looking around saying, you know, somebody's got to do something about this. Somebody's got to do something about this. And I come from an alternative dispute resolution, ADR, and law background. So I was kind of looking at it from that perspective. But then I realized it's also a cultural perspective. And so finally, what ended up happening is I said, well, somebody's got to step up. And people kept saying, well, why don't you do something? And so I created Civilination, and it's a nonprofit that's dedicated to reducing online harassment, character assassination, misinformation, and violence. And we do that through education, skills training, and offering a bunch of resources on our website. And we got our 501c3 late in 2010. So we've been around for about 10 years. And more recently, I was looking, especially after the last 4 or 5 years, which have been enormously interesting online, especially globally so, but especially in the United States.
Statement of the decade.
Yeah, exactly.
Wickerly of Civility.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep this. I mean, I've heard some of your guests on here before, and they can, you know, throw out the F-bombs and stuff like that, but I'm trying to keep it kind of
civil?
PG. Yeah, kind of, or at least PG-rated language-wise.
PG-13, you get one F-bomb, so use it for maximum.
I'll leave that to some of your other guests. But anyway, so looking at the second decade, I was like, okay, we want to bring new ideas into the organization and see where we can take it next, especially after what everybody's been going through these last couple of years. And so we went looking for, I approached the board and I was saying, well, let's see if we can get somebody else to lead the organization. I'll always be a part of it. I'll sit there and support the new leader. But we went and talked to a bunch of people. But what was super exciting is we met Jolie. And she was up for the challenge and said this was the perfect type of thing. And she's has vast experience. Here I am plugging her, but I am so thrilled. And she became president yesterday. So we're very much in the honeymoon phase and very excited to be working with her.
So we should check back with you.
Like, yeah.
You know, 3 months
really
right now.
And there's nerves. Yeah,
but anyway, that's the background on Civilization. So we wanted to put something out there. One quick thing, there are other organizations that deal with silo topics, like let's say non-consensual pornography or you know, defamation, or you name it. But Civilination has taken kind of a broad-based approach, trying to touch all of it and offer a lot of resources for folks, kind of be a clearinghouse of information to point people in the right direction.
The resources tab is immense at civilination.org. If you look at it, it goes deep and there's a lot to it. Now, Jolie Odell, I knew you back in the Weed White Web. Mashable.
Don't make fun of his speech impediment, Jolie.
And I'm forgetting after Mashable, but there were like six more.
VentureBeat.
Oh, VentureBeat, right.
Yeah, that was where I spent the most time.
Right. Yeah. But then I lost track of you. And then I just read on your new website, Civilization. Oh, and oh, by the way, produces operas. Things, yes. I didn't think I would know about Jolie Odell is produces operas. And seeing as Carrie's ready to sing the Valkyrie today, can you talk a little bit about the opera part before we go into the rest of Civilization? I just got to know.
Let's take that detour, Chris. Absolutely. Well, I studied opera in my youth, and there came a point in the technology world where I was a little bit, and it came across in my writing and how I viewed the ecosystem, I was a little bit fed up of what I saw as rich white men generating more wealth for other people who are like them. And I wanted to focus on something completely different. So I went back to opera, which was a passion in my youth. And I learned how to design and direct for the stage. And I started my own opera production company. Now, with COVID happening, I've had to take a big step back from all that. But I am writing a couple operas right now. It's fun. It's a great hobby. It's a very intense hobby. I don't have like normal hobbies. Like I'm reading War and Peace. I'm writing and producing operas. I need to like crochet or something or bake bread.
Don't bake it because then you got to eat it.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Bread is good for you.
But so yeah, that's so a real natural segue from opera to making more better online places to be.
I feel like actually having some time in the nonprofit space. Okay, now we're just into my gym selfies. I don't know how those got on my opera page. Good for me.
You
but,
went.
Yeah, we've got props and everything there. So I feel like getting to participate and run a nonprofit of my own gave me a lot of insight into fundraising, development, how to find people who are going to be passionate enough about your cause to help you out, to make introductions, to lend their voices to support you. So that was actually, it was really beneficial. I don't think there's an experience professionally that I've had that doesn't in some way contribute to what I want to do for Civil Nation.
I also think anytime you put your creative work out there in the world, you encounter those trolls Andrea was talking about. So,
oh my God.
It's unavoidable. The people that criticize almost never do anything, but they come out in force to talk about what you've done and why it's not good enough. So.
Oh, when I first started at Read Write Web, I was developing their video offerings. And because it was my face and my voice and me just being really enthusiastic about technology, like I literally physically got jumped a few months into that job. Some people on 4chan found me in real life. And God, I hope none of them are listening now, but it was absolutely traumatic. Like I had to be in the back of an ambulance and everything. So wow, Yeah. And that was how it started. And then to Andrea's point about, you know, it's kind of like asking sexual assault victims to just like, don't get raped. No, you make the other person accountable for the violence that's going on, especially online. So when I was the managing editor at VentureBeat, I would have to coach my young writers and I would say, listen, just don't read the comments ever. We're not paying you to read the comments. We will take down anything that's disruptive or we'll let you know if there's something you need to respond to. But I would tell these young, fresh out of college kids, I would be like, look, if someone doesn't love you and they're not paying you, you don't have to listen to their opinion, because I wanted to protect them. I wanted to protect my cub reporters from all the ugliness online. And I like Andrea's solution a lot better, which is to turn down the volume and try to help people eradicate the ugliness instead of insulating ourselves from those people out there.
I want to just highlight really quick on your site again, that resources page. So it's civilination.org. You go to the resources tab and there's a lot there. Fact-checking sites, privacy rights organizations, books to go through. Also how to find out a little bit more about investigative journalism. Never would I have thought that this whole concept. So I just re-released last year, the end of last year, a 10th anniversary edition of my book, Trust Agents. And you're pretty randomly honored when you get to rewrite a 10th anniversary edition. However, don't ever do it. It's a horrible idea. I had to take out all kinds of references to like how to get to the first page of Dig and stuff that nobody would ever know what it meant.
R.I.P.
So I know. I got
extra white
hair. It's like a 1950s
guide for catching a husband.
Really felt like that. Really felt like that. And but what I was alluding to with that was that we never could have predicted fake news. We never could have predicted this whole shenanigans of like people just not accepting baseline journalism, or people starting to use journalism platforms as a weapon instead of as a place to report what we can all agree is news.
I think that that's been going on since the 60s. There's a wonderful documentary about Gore Vidal and Bill Buckley and the televised debates they had after the Nixon-Kennedy race. But they got very heated. And in that series of debates, they got into ad hominem attacks. Bill Buckley called Gore Vidal a queer on live television, which he just didn't say back then. And I think that was a really big turning point for media discourse about politics. And I think it's kind of escalated and ramped up since then. And you have these polar extremes, like you have your Tucker Carlson and your Rachel Maddow, and there's so much in between. And consumers, we tend to take in media that confirms our own biases because that's comfortable and we should be allowed to do that. We shouldn't have to listen to things that grate on us and make us feel anxious. But also, like I'm a New York Times reader. I'm a big old liberal. I love that rag. However, they do use emotional language. They do make mistakes, just the way Fox News does. So I'm hoping that we can kind of tackle the current pressing issues of civility online from two fronts. One being, let's all turn down our own volume and be kinder to each other online. Let's slow down how we speak to each other. Let's respect each other. And then let's put some pressure on media to be more credible, more accountable, to move away from wild opinion and conjecture so that people can trust media again.
Andrea, I know you couldn't have exactly predicted it to be the way it's been. But where have you put the lion's share of your time in the last couple of years? Where do you have to spend your time on the conversation?
The last couple of years? I mean, the last couple of years, Civil Nation has really tried to point out the degree of misinformation and disinformation that's been taking over the globe. The last couple of years, we really took a little bit of a sharper tone because we felt that the circumstances required that. Prior, like 5 years ago, you know, the internet was always kind of a rough and tumble Wild West, regardless of what anybody says. You know, there's always been dark and ugly corners. But suddenly the worst behavior became normalized on the street and online. And so we felt a huge ethical obligation to speak out about that and to call it out. And to say, well, wait a minute, this is not normal, this is not healthy, and stop believing lies and garbage. I do want to say one thing. Obviously, we know what freedom of speech is from a legal perspective, from a value that we adhere and love in the United States. But when Civil Nation talks about freedom of speech, we frame it a little bit differently, not to discount the legal aspect of it and the part that needs to be protected because it doesn't exist in some parts of the world, as we all know. But we talk about honoring freedom of speech by giving everybody a voice online. And what that doesn't mean is allowing people to spread lies and disinformation and hate. But what it means is just because you disagree with somebody doesn't give you the right, again, an ethical right, a moral right, to sit there and beat up on them to the point where they're eviscerated, where their reputation is trashed, where they are suicidal. I mean, I've talked to people who were suicidal because of what happened to them online. You know, their business is destroyed, their reputation destroyed. And anybody in this business has done the same thing. And it's very, very scary. So I've talked to these folks. These are everyday folks and people that you have read about in the news. They're prominent people. So I've talked to all of them. But when you take away their voice and you shut them down because you disagree with them, that's not respecting freedom of speech. That's not respecting the First Amendment. And so we really have to have a shift and get away from what are we allowed to do legally, right? Because you can totally be an asshole online. There's a lot of things that you're allowed to do.
People get paid for that.
Well, yeah. And
it's like a job people have.
Like my blood pressure is going to go up if we start naming some of these folks. So I'm going to stay away from them. You know, they're in corners. Some of them are alive. Some of them have died. But you know, what we need to do is not just talk about our legal rights, which need to be honored and need to be protected, but we really, really, really need to talk about our responsibility and ethics. That's on part of the platforms that like to sit there and be intentionally indifferent to what's going on or saying, well, wait a minute, we don't care because it's legally allowed, or oops, it's too complicated to moderate a comment or something, all the way to people saying, you know, if you can't handle it, you're a snowflake, or get the F off the internet. That's not okay. It should be a place where we can all go and where we can debate and we can disagree and have vehement disagreements with somebody and be very passionate about it. But if my goal is to send somebody to your house, to dox you, to trash you, where you've really done nothing except have a different opinion and make sure that your livelihood is taken away and terrorize your family and your friends and everything like that, that is completely not okay.
I have a brief question. And I want to hear both your answers. I believe everything you just said. I concur with everything you just said. I think most normal human beings would, which is a horrible misspeak anyway. But is it okay to then go and knock down their little dark holes where they want to hide and have their conversations that we don't want to see or be part of?
There's you know a what difference I'm talking between, about. I think some of the things you're talking about are veering from free speech into hate speech. And I think nobody has the right to bring hate speech into the world and propagate it and spread it. That's kind of the opposite of what the First Amendment is for. So no, I don't think people should be allowed to, you know, organize hate rallies online on any platform. I think that platforms have so much responsibility for that, so much culpability for that, that they don't want to accept. But that's a legal quagmire.
They really
I don't think we're prepared to talk about.
Well, I'll tell you something super fast. I have been saying for weeks that one of my favorite backpack question answers was DJ Cumberbund's extra set of teeth. We're like, what goes in the backpack? He's like, extra set of teeth. And we're like, ha 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 ha. So I'll say that sometimes. And now I see like ads and get eBay things for like temporary teeth, like dentures and stuff. So if they can serve me up ads for temporary teeth and dentures, you know, on social media, they could spot, you know, a rally that's planning intentionally to turn into a riot. They can.
They could do
they
better
aren't.
Fighting that. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have always and only will ever. I mean, I'm talking going back to the first time I got invited to Facebook in what, 2009. And one of my editors, Marshall Kirkpatrick, was trying to hold Mark Zuckerberg accountable for manipulating people emotionally through algorithms and brain chemistry. And, they will always cover their butts until, in any way, until they legally can't anymore. And then they'll be like, oh, well, we have community standards and Donald Trump can't be on Twitter anymore. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, you let people commit all kinds of anti-Semitism with hashtags that trend on your platform, but now you shut Donald Trump down, you're covering your butt. And it's very, very obvious.
Even new platforms like Clubhouse, people are saying, hey, my harasser that I've banned and have like a restraining order against, you're like, hey, they just joined Clubhouse. Do you want to welcome them? And you're like, don't though.
No.
Yeah.
Well, Andrea, I think you picked a great new president for Civilla Nation. I think this is a good team. Listen, I got to push you backstage. I got things we got to do. We got to do ads and things, but we love you. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing it. This has been so
useful.
Don't
go anywhere. Please.
Stick around.
I have to, but don't you.
All right, Carrie, you get the heck out of here. Listen, I have to go back a few thousand comments.
Fine.
Yes, I'm going to go with glimpse too, because the first glimpse was in here. Yeah, I keep getting that a lot. I get it from the strangest and most lovely people. Seth Godin sent me an email. Hey, I saw you on StreamYard. Thanks, Seth Godin.
Well, they didn't ask me. Now I feel flighted.
Well, and not only that, but I had to make it twice because somehow the audio got mangled. But
the other types of ads I'll be seeing eventually from the show. Girl,
you don't even know the other types of ads. I just found, wait till I tell you about Backpack After Dark. We have an ad. I just read their website, though. The website copy is unintentionally super funny. Hey, John. John was my best friend in high school. John was, we hung out all the time, and John is the most incredible bass player I've ever met in my life.
No, I think we should announce on Backpack After Dark that's in there.
Oh, yeah, we can. That's just it. I mean, you can get your adult toys on the Backpack After Dark now.
That's the second guest we've had that had a discount on adult
on
toys.
Yeah, we'll have to get Dr. Sunny's back out there. Kat says that intentional indifference brings in that cash, which is totally
so true.
Blood
money is blood money. People have been making blood money for a long time.
Kira says, I don't think it's already been said, but this resonates with me. Free speech is not the same as free from repercussions. Oops, sorry. Doesn't the government spy on us through social media? Well, it's interesting. We actually decided to help them anyway. We just contribute all our spy data now to the social networks.
Yeah, we give it to Alexa and Echo.
We thought that 1984 was coming for us, but it's the other way around. John, we want all the Chris Brogan stories. John has some of the funniest stories in the world.
You have ads to do.
From misspent youth. Yeah, I gotta do some ads. And I gotta grab Jason.
About it.
Don't go away. We got Jason. So
all right, I gotta go.
Let me get out of here. Bye. See you. All right, we're sponsored by PubSite. If you're an author, which everybody is, Jolie, I think, has like 4 books, and Andrea has a couple of books. Maybe Jason needs to write a book. You can make a really quick-ass website, pub-site.com. It's free for 14 days. So on the 13 and a half day when you're not done actually trying out the trial, just pay for it. It's $20 a month. You can make it yourself. It'll take you just a couple hours. We saw this in action. You could do it in 40 minutes if you're wizardly. $4.99 if you want them to make it. Or if you want me to make it, $2,000. Last few days of Johnsonville Brats are over. We have our good friends at Johnsonville sponsoring us. That's the weirdest thing we've ever been able to say out loud. But Carrie at chrisbrogan.com, if you want her to send you free sausage, no lie. She even negotiated a trade deal with Canada. Not even joking. This show is run on a platform called StreamYard. seebrogan.me/StreamYard. Make your own damn show. But you've got to get your own Civilla Nation founders and new presidents. Hey, do you like looking at this show but not my ugly face? Psh! get the audio podcast. Castos is the host. After years and years and years of my friends at Libsyn serving my every whim for every podcast I made on a dime, I tried out my new friend Matt Medeiros' platform, Castos. It's not really his. He just works there. But Castos.com, you can get your own podcast platform. Boy, it's easy. Super easy. And every complaint you've ever had about Libsyn not updating their UI since maybe 2002, it's all here. So if you want a simple, easy way to throw a podcast up and not have to wonder what's this button do just before the site goes down, that's that. Finally, if you wanted to buy a new domain, because, you know, I know Jolie might want one, you could get a .online domain. So 99 cents for the first year. Just go to cbrogan.me/online. And when it's time to put in a code, just put in the code Chris. All caps for reasons I don't really know, but who would have thunk it? So there we go. I'm going to grab Jason Davis because otherwise terrible things could happen, but... Hey, boss, you've done great waiting. Thanks for being on the show today, Jason.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed the segment with, what is it, Civilization?
Civilization.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
So it's, you know, and I'm sure you run into that. You probably run into it yourself. You probably get a hater here and there. But you also probably have the situation where, you know, some of the acts you work with, some of the people you represent run into it. Let's start, I guess, at the good old days. Tell everybody the stuff that they absolutely would be asking you if they had their favorite beverage of choice in their hands. You know, things like you maybe worked with Boys to Men or that old Dolly Parton lady or somebody.
Well, I started out as a songwriter in the music business. Broke into the industry 23 years ago and really found a passion for finding artists and developing artists and managing artists, trying to help artists get record deals. And, you know, that led me to, you know, just having to work with better songwriters and better producers. And as you kind of grow, get up the ladder of talent in the industry, you start meeting, you know, more celebrity types. And so that led me to, you know, work with some of the really cool people I've been fortunate enough to work with over the years.
If anyone's actually looked at that banner I stuck up, there's a, you know, it's a slightly mixed array, Jason. Yeah. Boys to Men, I don't know, has ever done a song with Dolly. I don't know if Diddy has ever produced anything with Alabama. Sugar Ray, I mean, come on now. I mean, there's no more 90s act, which of course would go perfect with Lone Star. How did that happen? And so does that follow your pleasures? That's like who the kinds of people you like, or how do you work with who you worked with?
Well, a lot of it was location. So I started first 5 years I was in the business, I was out of New York City, and there was a lot of, you know, record label people working with pop and urban music and R&B, hip hop. And then I moved to LA and I lived in Los Angeles for 4 years, and that was just more pop, hip hop. And then I moved back to New York for 5 years. And, but the entire time I was always going back and forth to Nashville. Mm. So just, you know, being in, I've also worked, you know, I spent a few months working out of Miami. So just being in different locations, you tend to, you know, meet different, the record labels are in different locations and they're working on different genres of music. And, but I've always been very open too. I just love music. I've even worked with, you know, I think it was Jolie mentioned opera. You know, I've worked with a couple of classical opera singers. So, I mean, I've worked with punk bands. I've worked with rappers. I've you know, worked with Latin singers. So I've always been extremely open. It's really just me gravitating towards talent. And if that talent is, you know, a punk band, or if that talent is a country singer, if that talent's a Christian singer or a pop singer, that's never really mattered that much to me. It's you know, the character and integrity of the individuals I work with matter to me a lot. But as far as like genre and type of music, I've always been very open.
Well, so, I mean, you're kind of working on the beard, but this makes me think of Rick Rubin or something. Like, you know, are you walking around barefoot over there? I mean, he's done this where he's worked with country acts and all that sort of a thing. Is that, you know, is there a, I mean, seems like Rick's one of a kind in that weird way, but you've done the same thing. You sort of have a multi-hyphenate kind of experience. from coming from, you said, so first I got in through songwriting and then I started developing talent. And I feel like even that's weird. Like, you know, you write a song and Diddy says, yes, this is all right, I'll buy this song. And then you're like, and I also found this band. Like, right. That seems weird. Why did people keep giving you the ball like this?
Well, the very first record label meeting I ever had was at Sony Music, and it was with this guy named Marvin Peer, who no longer is in the music business. But at the time, he was the senior vice president for Sony. And I was just pitching my songs and got in a quick meeting with him. And he liked the songs I was pitching. He wasn't really blown away by them, but he liked me. He liked the songs a little bit. And he started mentioning this girl that he had just signed to a record deal named Mandy Moore.
Oh, that one.
And so... just him talking about signing a girl, and he talked about some of the other artists he signed. You know, I was so excited to get into a record label back then that, you know, my brain was like, okay, well, if they're looking for artists, that's another opportunity for me to find something that they need. And so on top of writing songs, I started feeling a desire to find artists, not only to help people kind of, you know, getting into record labels was such a dream for me. And it was so mind-blowing for me back then that the idea of helping somebody else achieve that or helping somebody else walk into those buildings was very exciting for me. And then also, too, you know, just knowing that, okay, if I find various things, that's more reason I have to walk into this building. And so it became about, you know, the first year and a half I was in the business, it was about songwriting, but it was also about finding talent and trying to get that talent into labels. And then as I did both things, I actually I did land a bunch of songs I wrote on records, thank God, but I started finding it. I felt more passion finding people and helping other people's dreams come true.
More so than landing your song.
Yeah. Cause this is the way I'd explain it. I don't know if this is a good explanation or not, but when I was writing songs by myself and, you know, pitching songs to labels, I really felt like I was almost like on a beach vacation by myself, having all these amazing experiences and meeting these great, amazing people, but I really had no one to share it with. And then when I started working with artists and I would get them into record label buildings or, you know, get them meetings, you know, getting to watch their face and how excited they were and knowing that this was really affecting their life and confidence and so all of a sudden it felt like I was like on a beach vacation with somebody else to share it with. Mm-hmm. So it felt more rewarding than kind of just focusing on me.
So my pal Naz wanted to know, speaking of focusing on you, what kind of genre of songs do you do? Like, what are the ones you've landed when you've sold? A lot of pop, a lot of country, a lot of punk? What are you rocking out?
Well, when I was, you know, 23 years ago when I was landing songs on records, it's actually crazy. The first three songs I landed on records was in the Christian music industry.
Oh, naturally.
And when that happened, I actually was I'm 100% Jewish. And I actually was like borderline atheist back then. And so like I was like a Jewish atheist landing Christian songs, which made no sense to me at all.
Clearly.
But today I will say I am a Christian and have read the Bible. But back then, that was really bizarre. And then the second batch of like four songs I landed on a record was actually a Latin singer on Warner, Way Latina, which is Warner Brothers' Latin label based out of Miami. And I don't speak a word of Spanish. So like the first two things I landed, which is a total of seven songs, wow, I landed on records, it was so foreign and it made no sense. And as I was, you know, getting into labels and stuff, you know, I had opportunities to write with like back then Natalie Imbruglia and some pretty, you know, had the Backstreet Boys looking at a song of mine. But, you know, pretty quickly, I would say after about 18 months, I realized that my ultimate passion was finding artists.
That's great. Well, so this is a question from Paul. Jason, do you find talent before their type of music is big or as it's coming up? You know, look at dubstep. That was alive for 2 years. Would you have landed some dubstep artist before they went back to disassembling toasters? Or what's the process like?
Yeah, I don't think I'm that good. I would say, you know, pretty much everything I've ever worked on, you know, there was nothing new under the sun, you know, but I would say that, you know, I've always had a knack for finding people that feel special. I've always, you know, I'm not gifted at too many things in this life of mine, but one of the giftings I do have is I've always been able to see special things in people, and it's always been interesting to me because when I see something special, even though maybe nobody's noticed this person or nobody's really interested in this person before I met them, I've always known how to position people or shape the narrative or shape things so people can see what I see in somebody. So I've always loved identifying something special within somebody before others see it, and then figuring out a way to really position that person and guide that person to a point where others will see that special quality or gifting, hopefully on steroids.
Naz wants to know that favorite music industry question. Wait, do you happen to know my friend Gustavo Menendez from Warner Brothers? Do you know any of those?
I do not.
It's a little bit bigger industry than that, I would have to imagine.
I mean, I'll say, you know, when I worked on Latin music, you know, it was the Latin record that I was a part of, that was literally 22 years ago. And back then, the president of Way Latina was George Zamora. And then the A&R guy that oversaw that record was Jorge Peloto. He was a very, very famous songwriter and A&R guy. So
Paul points out that you said you're not gifted, but you've got U2, Tim McGraw, Taylor Swift, couple of nobodies, Bieber, Rita Ora. So that, you know, it takes a little bit of talent for somebody to put their you know, nuts in your tree.
Well, and those are songwriters and producers that I work with. So, you know, I'm not working directly with all of those artists. I would say many of those artists I'm not working directly with.
You don't have to tell us that, Jason. We don't know, dude. You could be like, I'm with all of those people, like Beavers in the other room.
But I will say, you know, those are songwriters and producers that we work with and have worked with for many years. So,
right. So that was the one thing I noticed too, is that, you know, when Carrie made this banner, I feel like we could have made four banners because there's Radar, there's Noble, there's all these other, I can't even read half of them, Awaken. What do you have, like a accordion instead of a business card? Like, does it go like that when you open it up?
I actually don't use a business card. Actually, when I first moved to LA, the first meeting I ever had was with a guy named, I'm not based in LA now. I'm based out of Nashville, and also I have a small little secondary office, kind of a getaway, have a place in Florida. But Nashville's where my team is and where we're based out of.
Cool.
But actually, the first meeting I ever had when I moved to LA was with a guy named Spencer Galbraith, who used to work for Interscope Records. And him and I had became really good friends. But first time I ever met him, we were at in Interscope in Santa Monica. And I asked him for a card because I wanted to get his phone number. Mm-hmm. I was excited. I was meeting him. And he looked at me and goes, you don't need a card. You got a cell phone. Just put my number in your phone. And so I was like, wow, that's actually a good idea. So I've never had a card since, you know, in probably 18, 19 years. But, you know, the different businesses and things like that, they're really just different relationships I've met over the years. I love entrepreneurship. I love growing things. I love building people, businesses. I'm very passionate about business and doing it righteously. So when I meet people in the business that I like, I'm usually always trying to think of ways that I could work with them more, more from a place relationally. Than business. For me, everything kind of starts relationally. As an adult, you know, we don't have a lot of time for friendships like we did in high school. And so if I'm not working with somebody, I'm so busy, it's really hard to maintain friendships. Mm-hmm. But in business, if I'm working with on a project with somebody, it kind of just naturally connects me and that person, where we have to talk all the time. And so I'm always gravitating to somebody that I feel like I have a lot of love for, or somebody that excites me personally. And then, you know, it's been just figuring out ways, you know, do we work on an artist together, or do we grow something together? So that's the different businesses. So
you could stand up a new album for Jack White. I mean, he could stop doing some upholstery again for a minute, come back and hang out with you. And like, you know, he's right down the street, man.
Yeah, he is. His Third Man record shop and studios right pretty close. Yeah.
And his weird castle that you can't look inside, but you want to because there's weird stuff in it.
Yeah.
I almost got a chance to look inside it, but Jack Black chickened out at the last minute and didn't keep the film. So that's all I know about that. I'm going to grab everybody back. We're going to do a wee bit of a panel, but this has been ridiculous. So before I let you go, before I ask you panel type questions, what's the project you're working on now in the next couple of months? Can you even talk like that, like things about to come out or no?
Yeah, there's actually a new, she's a Christian artist. Her name is Ann Wilson. I met her about 3 years ago. I actually met her when she was 15, turning 16. Met her and her parents, and she just turned 19. She got signed to Capitol Records about 13 months ago. And she's very like Southern, really rootsy, really, really cool.
She looked like this? Was this the one?
Yes, yes. Okay. And she's an amazing, amazing person, talent, heart. But her first radio single comes out online April 16th, and it goes for radio ads May 21st, and she's extremely special.
Very cool. You didn't try to convince her maybe she should pick a different name?
No, I mean, we get a lot of the heart thing, Ann Wilson from Heart, but, you know, there hasn't been too much confusion so far, so. Mm.
I mean, she could make it extra confusing. She could do a little cover of Barracuda.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, good.
So, Kat says, I'm thankful for storytellers that choose songs. And Deanna says, hi, Deanna, we'll start the show over for you. Naz has one last question. Who's a favorite musician that you've worked with? You can pick a favorite. They're not listening. No one watches.
I mean, I would say recent artists like Austin French and Ann Wilson are two of my favorites. But I would say like probably the coolest experience was probably being in Dolly Parton's camp. I mean, I've definitely worked a little bit with some legendary type artists, but that was the most inside, the inner workings and inner life of a legendary artist I've ever been. And it was a long time that I worked there. So just kind of getting to see the behind the scenes of her life you know, it was very, it really learned a lot during that time.
I'd vote for her for president. Yeah. That's for darn sure. All right. I'm grabbing a couple Civilization people and then we could start to wrap this show right up. Hey people, welcome back. Good to see you. Like how I give you like so much warning, like, you know, you're back. When you see what Jason's been working on, you've got to think to yourself, holy cow, he must run into some haters out there and he must run into people that need some Civilization wisdom. Well, what kind of things have you talked about or done with regards to music artists and that sort of a thing in your life? Anything come to mind?
If I could just throw out one thing really quick. I mean, I was blown away by what the two of you do. And I mean, we're constantly monitoring artists that we work with and their socials, and especially the female artists, but male artists too. I mean, we get some really, you know, in the private comments, we get some insane messages sometimes, sometimes some scary messages. So I'm pretty blown away by what the two of you do.
Well, I know you don't have a business card, but you maybe could find these people on somewhere like Twitter. They could be pretty helpful in your future dealings.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. What happens to musical people out there, Jolie and Andrea?
Oh, what doesn't? I think the younger you are, the more feminine you present, and the wider your fan base is, the more negative attention you get. Like I got a bunch of followers on Twitter. I swear to God, half of them are just there to hate me. But yeah, it's a problem educating fans how to be appropriate and respectful.
You know, it's also very interesting because if somebody is in the public eye, let's say they're a, you know, in the entertainment field, or they're a tech celebrity, or, you know, in some other way known, a lot of people assume that they have the right just to treat them more harshly than they would their neighbor down the street, simply because they are in the public eye. And we tend to objectify people like that and assume just because, let's say, they're a singer, right? They're a singer, they're on stage, that when they're doing something that isn't exactly on stage, whether that's an interview or actually a concert or whatever it is, right? That we just have the right to be directly accessible to them and treat them in a way that, you know, we wouldn't want on our worst enemy. So that's part of the downside of fame as well. But in my opinion, it's been really exacerbated online, where you can feign familiarity with somebody. And nowadays, obviously, you want to bring reach out to your fans and become very personal. But there is no line drawn. And I think it's a two-way problem there. Does that make sense?
Very much so. And I have two different ways I could go with that too, because one of the things I was reading an article about who are the most successful at OnlyFans. And I support the concept of this. I mean, if someone wants to get paid to show off their naked body, good on you. Because there's been a lot of free and stolen footage for a very long time. So if you can make a buck from it, like I just saw some woman got like shamed by her school and the kid got in trouble and everything because her mom had an OnlyFans, and that's where you come in. That's where Civilination should come and like fix that girl's life, woman's life. But the top earners are the ones that stay the most personable. And I thought, oh my gosh, what a way to like lick the fire. Like that's as close to a bad idea as you could have. And yet that's where the revenue comes from. So it's great advice and also spooky how that gets played.
I think creating a personable persona is a big part of the mental gymnastics you have to do to be successful as an internet personality. And Chris, you and I know that from way back, the successful internet personalities of our day, like iJustine. Oh my God.
I was just thinking of her. Yep.
Yeah. And when you meet her in person, she's so different. So right. Very different, but she created that persona who was, very accessible and very relatable, and people thought they knew her. They had no idea who she was. I think for a lot of the OnlyFans creators, it's probably the same way.
I think you're right. And then the other thought I had, the opposite, was I just saw an interview with Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter, and he says it's weird that over in England, they're awful with him. Like some random person, he goes, and actually weirdly, the richer they are, the more entitled they feel they are. And he says, they'll just grab me. Yo, Dan, come take this picture. And he goes, in New York, he gets left alone. He can just walk around in New York and it's not so crazy. He said, I love it more here. I was also thinking of Ryan Reynolds, who just famously was good at responding to thirsty tweets. And so, for instance, there were a few tweets like, this is Bored Panda, sorry. I have to ask, what does your wife say about all these explicit fan requests you get? He says, pretty sure my wife's writing most of these. but for instance, you know, please, by all means, do murder my vagina, kind sir. Oh, sorry, just holding my infant niece in my arms for her baptism right now. So I love that he replays it by saying some ridiculously wholesome thing as they're saying some awful thing to him. And I don't know that would work well for a woman replying. I don't think people would understand the humor of it, but.
Oh, it does. It plays out.
It works.
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah. Good.
I want it to. Paul asks, when did it become accessible to treat entertainers with hate and disrespect just because you buy their product doesn't mean you own them? I mean, that's a good
that goes to into media law. Media law is completely different for celebrities and public figures than it is for normal people. And so if the media can ask them personal questions and paparazzi legally can follow them all around and publish pictures of them when they're just out buying their groceries or at a cafe, then we also feel entitled to treat them, you know, put them under our own microscopes.
Mm-hmm. Jason, do you have to go through some of that training too? Like as you're schooling up Ann Wilson, do you say to her, hey, by the way, like some hell's coming your way?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's any, I would say mainly with female artists, sadly, very sadly, but there's just a lot of conversations. I mean, especially with a girl that age, when when a female is younger and she's single, and it's kind of obvious that she's single and obvious that she's younger, there's a lot less respect shown. It's almost, you know, borderline, you know, feels a little dangerous at times.
Does feel that way. Brea Grant from the old series Heroes, the science fiction series Heroes, she was talking about one of the first things she had to change in social networks was say, "I'm going to." Instead, she'd have to start saying, "I just came from," because she'd say, "I'm going to," and next thing you know, she'd be the creepiest humans in the world are there waiting. And so it's amazing how we can't even use the tools the same, and people don't know that. Just people think, well, why are you on Twitter then? And it's like, it's different for you. It's different for you. All right, we're at the end of the show. We have to do the backpack question, and I have to get you out of here. I also have to assign our person of the day. I almost forgot.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
You know what? I'm going to give it to my high school pal, John. John was in several really awesome, successful bands. Never got all the way over the big hump, but played some pretty big shows, and he was always my idol musically. So, you know, anytime you can have an old high school best friend show up for your show, it's not a bad thing. All right. So we're at that part of the show where we ask the same question of every single guest, which is what goes in your backpack? It could be something physical. It could be something like an avocado. Or it could be something metaphorical, like kindness. So I'm going to start with Andrea Weckerly. What goes in your backpack?
So I've got two things. One is a brain, so we can strengthen our critical thinking skills. And the other is an energy bar, so we can get up every day and make the world a better place.
I like it. I like it. So brain and an energy bar. Gee, I need to get some energy bars. Jolie Odell, long-lost friend. What goes in the backpack?
Almond butter. It's good for you. It's good for everybody. And the golden rule. Treat others the way you want to be treated.
We're doing pairings evidently today, Jason. Don't let me down. What goes in your backpack, good sir?
I've only got one. Sorry.
That's a good answer. There can be only one.
I would say, you know, the thing I focus most on is just how to, you know, put others before myself. You know, really having a deep caring and heart to serve another.
Serving others is never going to go out of style. I think we're going to have a good time with that for sure. Mm-hmm. My grandmother had a musical taste. I think that was very similar to Jason's, because while other people's grandparents loved, you know, music appropriate to their age and their time, my grandmother loved everything from Toto to Judas Priest to Iron Maiden. And I'll tell you, one of her favorite, and also the Village People. She loved the hell out of the Village People. And so one of my biggest, fondest memories of my Grammy is dancing with her to this song.